This is Digital Dave. You're listening to EAA Radio, and I'm joined by Mr. Jay Carter of Carter Aviation. How you doing, Jay?
I'm doing great.
Now, you've got a very unusual machine.
We call it a slowed rotor compound, but actually it's a part helicopter, part autogyro, and a part fixed-wing airplane. It's a hybrid, and it combines the best of all of those features into one aircraft that allows us to take off and land vertically like a helicopter, yet fly real fast and efficient like a fixed-wing airplane. It's kind of the holy grail.
Without the complexity of, say, a V-22.
That is correct. Without the complexity of V-22.
Now, I know you've broken what is known as the Mu-1 barrier. That is the top speed achievable by a helicopter.
Well, Mu is actually a ratio. It's a helicopter term. It's the forward speed of the aircraft divided by the tip speed of the rotor. So if you're flying 200 miles an hour and you slow the rotor tip down to 200, then that's 200 divided by 200. That's 1. So that's a mu of 1. But most helicopters fly at a mu of about 0.3. So when you get to a mu of 1, it means that the retreating blade at the tip has got zero airflow over it, because you're going forward 200 miles an hour and the blade is going 200. So the retreating blade is zero at the tip. And then it's reverse flow completely inboard of that. So the air is flowing over the rotor blade in the opposite direction. Yet that rotor blade has to produce the same lift as the advancing blade. And so this ends up being where so many people thought this was an impossible thing to do. And it was difficult. Definitely difficult.
I mean, it sounds so simple. Slow the rotor down and you go, you know, you change that ratio, you go past barrier. However, you got to keep the rotor from flapping and doing all sorts of other nasty things.
Right. So there's a number of issues we had to resolve on the thing, but it's extremely stable now. We have no issues whatsoever. We fly above Mu-1. It's ultra smooth. Pilots talk about how smooth it is when we get up. It's just because the rotor now has become unloaded, so it's not really producing any lift. And as a consequence, the drag is way down. As fact is, to kind of put it in perspective so people can kind of get the perspective and why it's so important to slow the rotor down. And that is because the drag on the rotor blade is a function of its RPM. RPM cubed. So what that means is that at the RPM where it takes off, like in a normal helicopter, if you can slow the RPM from that 300 RPM down to 100 RPM, you've reduced the drag by a factor of 27 times. It means that the rotor almost disappears relative to the rest of the drag of the aircraft. So because of this phenomena, and it's basically a straight aerodynamic calculation to do that, but what that means is, it means that our rotor takes care of our lift for the vertical takeoff, the slow speed. So our wing now is sized for high-speed cruise, not for takeoff and landings like it is in fixed-wing airplanes. So as a result, our wing area is a fourth to a fifth of the size of a conventional fixed-wing airplane for the same gross weight. So that means that our lifting surface drag is a fourth to a fifth, the profile drag. So then when you slow the rotor down and its drag drops by a factor of 27 times, now then you actually end up with less drag than a fixed-wing airplane. And you have the vertical takeoff and landing capabilities, plus you've also got an auto-rotating rotor that's driven by the air flowing up through it, much like the air drives a wind turbine. So if we lose an engine, we're making a standard normal landing, which is an auto-rotation landing. So that's what we do all the time. We make auto-rotation landings, but that's a piece of cake for us. It's designed to do that. So that makes this aircraft not only so versatile in that we can take off and land vertically, but we can fly really efficient long distances, and then we have the built-in safety if we lose an engine. So our sink rate, if we lose an engine, we were in the dead of night, and we hold 40 miles an hour, our sink rate will be about 1,200 foot a minute. We designed our landing gear to handle 24 foot per second. So that means that dead of night, don't even have to know when you're getting close to the ground. Unless you hit a building or a tree or fall off of a cliff, you can come in and land, and you're not going to hurt the passengers or the people.
You're going to absorb a 1,200 foot per minute descent, and that's normal.
That's not normal, but that's normal.
It's within the capability.
That's the capability of the aircraft.
Wow.
And that's what you'll have in a dead stick, lose the engine. Now, normally when you come in, you'll do a little flare. And, of course, when you do a flare, you slow your sink rate and you slow your forward speed down. But I'm saying you don't have to do that. I mean, that's great if you can do that and you got some sunlight or you got some light to see the ground. But if you don't and it's just dead of night, hold that 40 miles an hour. And like I said, if you don't hit a building or a tree, or you're not going to hurt the aircraft or the people in it.
Wow, just wait for the thump and then get out.
That's it. It's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you also have this jump capability for a vertical takeoff. How does that work?
It's basically for our jump takeoff, it's nothing more than a lot of energy stored in the rotor blade. We spin the rotor up with zero pitch, so that way it doesn't take so much horsepower. And we're not producing any lift as we spin the rotor up. And we spin the rotor up to an overspeed RPM. And we speed the rotor up to a maximum of 400 RPM. There's about 100 pounds of weight in the tip of each rotor blade. So that, coupled with the fact that you're spinning the tip at about Mach 0.82, gives you a phenomenal amount of stored up energy. So when we get ready to take off, we disengage the clutch because we have to have some way to drive the rotor. And, of course, while we're sitting on the ground, we just lock the brakes. So that takes care of the torque so we don't have to have a tail rotor in the back. So then when we get ready to take off, we just simply disengage the clutch. Now the rotor is freely spinning. And when the pilot is ready, he just pushes a button that releases a lock on the collective. The collective increases in pitch. And the aircraft jumps in the air. So now then, this weight that's out in the tip of each rotor blade, that's what drives the rotor blade, just like tip jets. So that's why it's like a helicopter, only it's got inertia out there instead of tip jets driving it. And so that's how we can jump in the air. And so we actually have so much energy in the rotor blade that we could jump at gross weight at 400 RPM, standard date, we could jump straight up in the air 150 feet.
Wow. So much for the 50-foot obstacle.
Yeah. But, well, here's the issue with doing that, of course. If we go straight up, then we haven't developed any forward speed, and we really need to get to about 50 miles an hour in order to have enough thrust to propel the aircraft forward, because at that point you become an autogyro, and the rotor is tilted back, and so now air flows up through the rotor blade, and that's what drives the rotor blade. But that's what also gives us this built-in safety that if you ever lose an engine, the rotor just continues to flow up through the rotor blade and allows you to come down about the speed of a parachute.
Wow. Now, where are you in your program right now? I had read that you had gotten some military development contracts. They're kind of interested in the machine.
We ended up getting a Phase 1 DARPA contract. DARPA is the research and development arm for all the services. And the Navy has a need for an aircraft that could take off from a small helipad, like on a destroyer, and be able to fly out 1,000 miles carrying 600 pounds of payload, sensors or ordnance, stay on site for at least 12 hours, then turn around and fly back that 1,000 miles.
That's a lot of fuel.
That's a lot of fuel. That's a lot of distance. That's a lot of time in the air. That's way over 24 hours in the air for doing this. And then make a landing on this helipad on a destroyer in a Class 5 sea state. That's major.
They don't want much, do they?
No. Well, anyway, we feel like we could do that for them. And fact is, we have some really good subcontractors that have worked with us on that, and they've confirmed that that we are capable of doing that. And it's because we have so much energy stored up in our rotor blade that we can make the jump takeoff. And not only can we make the jump takeoff, but when we're coming in for a landing, we can store that energy back up in the rotor blade. So that once we come in, we could actually flare, land, and touch on the deck of the ship, and then get the signal to abort and then use that stored up energy that we have in the rotor blade and jump back up in the air and fly off again.
Wow. Now that would be something to see.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of like to show off.
Yeah.
We like the opportunity to do that someday.
I'm hoping you'll bring one. Well, you do have one here, but you said you're having some ignition trouble today.
Yeah, we're having some ignition. So we're really disappointed we're not going to get to fly in the showcase. But we'll have it here out in front of HAI. And so we'll have it here through Thursday at HAI, out in front of HAI.
Well, sounds good. Sounds good.
Yeah,
what's the future? Multi-seat versions? Bigger, better? Home-built? Garage?
Licensing the technology. I mean, that's really our goal, is to license the technology. So we're talking to a couple of major aerospace companies. And what we'd like to maybe do is find a kit plane manufacturer that's done a really good job at kit plane manufacturing and license with them to... So we can provide this aircraft to the general public, you know, as a kit plane, two-place, four-place.
Yeah, I would think the technology is totally scalable. I would think the big engineering challenge is making that rotor strong enough to handle, because obviously the larger rotor is going to have more weight in the tips, which means it's got to be a lot stronger and stiffer.
Well, yeah, except that everything scales up, and it actually is, it's very scalable, and... one of the nice things is our rotor blade is extremely simple. Relatively speaking, it is extremely simple. And it's one of the reasons why, in spite of the fact that we have all this weight in the tip of the rotor blades, our rotor blades still weigh less than helicopter rotor blades. Because we basically have a filament wound spar, it's a carbon spar, that handles all of the centrifugal force, but it's torsionally real soft. So we can just simply twist the spar, and that's how we change the collective. So we don't have to have any hub or bearings or spindle. We don't have to have any lead lag hinges. We don't have to have any flapping hinges. All of that goes away. And so
it literally just bolts to the main shaft directly.
It just basically, we have a teetering. It has to sit and teeter. And so long as it's free to sit there and teeter, then it's impossible to generate any gyroscopic loads. And it's this teetering that provides the lift equilibrium between the advancing and the retreating blade. And that works whether I am flying at 100 miles an hour or I'm flying at 300 miles an hour and I'm at mu 2 or 3 and I have reverse airflow over the entire retreating blade. It still works.
Well, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, it ends up being really quite simple. And sometimes you say, gosh, why hadn't they figured this out
right,
before?
Right, right. God, I could have had a V8.
Yeah, I could have had a V8. Why hadn't somebody figured this out before? Well, I mean, they've tried, but they just had some issues. And I guess really the reason that we've been successful is we just don't give up. And there have been some problems and issues, you know, that we had to overcome, but we've been able to overcome them, and it's just, like I said, it's really smooth and quite simple, relatively speaking, you know, to a helicopter. It's going to cost more than a fixed-wing airplane for the same gross weight, same speed, but it's going to be a lot less than a helicopter, and from a safety standpoint, there's just no comparison.
Specialized pilot requirements? I mean, something anybody can be taught to fly.
Well, you're going to have, if you've got a fixed wing license, then it'll be an add-on like a gyro or a seaplane or a multi-engine or a complex or something, you know, but you don't have to have a helicopter license unless you have control of the collective. Well, our collective is all automatic. It's all mechanical and it's all automatic and the pilot can't mess up. So that makes it really nice and convenient. And so it does. It flies like a fixed-wing airplane. It's just that when we get down to the 40 miles an hour, we still have excellent control because now the rotor is providing nearly all of the lift. And so we have control like you would have in a helicopter. Ailerons still work. Horizontal stabilizer still works. It's just that you're not going very fast. So they're really ineffective. But you do have a rotor blade that's providing nearly all your lift, so that provides your really good control authority. So you got great control authority. You don't have the stall like you have in an aircraft. If we get to flying too slow, then our sink rate just increases. But we don't fall out of the sky. We don't, you know, have a wing over or
right.
anything.
Right, you know. Stall spin.
Yeah, don't have any of that. We're really anxious to start showing off the aircraft. We've been flying a lot. The FAA has changed our designation from R&D to exhibit. So now
that means they're confident.
Yeah. So I mean, in fact, there's a FAA inspector that happens to be the airport manager who represents him, and so of course he watches us fly all the time. So, you know, they got a representative right there watching. You know, so there's no hiding anything.
That's
you know?
Right.
And so that works to our benefit because he can see what we're doing and knows that. That it's safe. I mean, like we've flown like the longest flight's about 2.5 hours long. Most of our flights are in the 30 to 45 minutes because we have something specific that we're wanting to go check. And
right.
we don't just go out and fly to be flying. We're going out to fly to improve the product or check something
accomplish
out.
The mission.
Right.
Yep.
Accomplish the mission. So.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for joining us, and I'm hoping that you can get that machine together, and maybe we can see it later in the week.
Well, we'll have it here regardless. I mean, we'll bring it in. We'll get it in, and we'll be out in front of the HAI pavilion, and so people will be able to see it. And we got some handouts, and we got lots of video. I mean, if people want to go to our website. You know, there's a lot of great video.
Well, that sounds really good. It's a ways before I can pay for a ride in it, though, right?
There is a ways, yeah.
That's okay. You're well on your way.
We'd like to get some people interested in licensing the technology. That's the next step. Really, the next step is to start really flying the aircraft around, demonstrating it, showing off its capabilities. But like I said, there's some major aerospace companies that we're talking to that see the light.
Good.
See the light.
Very good. So. Thank you again, sir.
Okay.
This is Digital Dave, and you're listening to EAA Radio.